This is the third season of Record of Change, and I'm Pratap Nair, your host for this episode. Here at the podcast, we talk to people from around the world to understand how the COVID-19 pandemic is shaping their lives. This season will feature a mix of new and familiar voices. I'm talking to you from the city of Düsseldorf in northwest Germany, where the vaccination efforts are underway and the government has announced an extension of lockdown till mid-February to contain the rise in coronavirus cases. Today, we'll hear from the Istanbul-based journalist Didem Tali. She was a first-ever interviewee in Season 1. Didem used the lockdown to finish multiple projects to keep herself occupied. So at the end of the year, she has written a book, finished a short documentary about Syrian refugees in Istanbul, and started working on an app that aggregates positive stories from around the world. She's calling it Sanity Feed. We all know sanity is in short supply in these times. Here's a conversation. We did speak over the New Year.
Yes, that's true.
We raised a toast to each other and yes, hoping that the New Year will bring us normalcy.
Yes, absolutely. I really like that. I wanted to have some kind of a novelty and some normalcy on the New Year's Eve. So I thought I would call a couple of my close friends, including you, to just have a virtual toast. And yeah, that was a lovely way to catch up. Maybe even beyond pandemic, if we are for some reason indoors and not necessarily have anything super memorable, maybe it's something, a ritual that I can keep doing.
Yeah. So is that what you guys did over the New Year's Eve? Did you guys just call your friends and wish New Year?
So we've been in a pretty hard lockdown over the New Year's. For throughout the 4 days, we were only allowed to go to grocery store in a limited amount of time and only to a place within your own neighborhood and within walking distance. So I can definitely appreciate the need of these lockdowns from a public health perspective, because we don't celebrate Christmas in Turkey, but we have a pretty big New Year's Eve, which is a combination of all the winter festivities. So I do think probably it was a smart thing to do. But at the same time, I think you're allowed to feel slightly grumpy about it, because I had all my big milestones in lockdown this year. My birthday, my husband's birthday, and a few of the professional milestones, like getting accepted into some fellowships or signing up with my agent and so on. And overall, for the time being, we've been in lockdown since November.
So taking stock, considering whatever happened in 2020, this pandemic came down on us, how would you rate the year that went by?
I personally had a surprisingly good year, surprisingly lucky year, because when I was actually able to have an uninterrupted, long, dare I say it, a bit boring chunk of focusing time, I ended up finishing so many things that I thought would be great if I did. And this included finishing my novel and getting an agent. And I am right now working on a journalism app, which is a project that I've been talking about and wanted to do for such a long time as well. And I produced a short documentary over the summer, which I've been submitting to festivals and getting really great responses. And I've been getting a lot of opportunities, grants and fellowships. So I guess I have very little to complain on a personal level.
Okay. You give us all complex to them.
Well, yeah, I have to admit it's been after that real low in like March or so when we just went into lockdown. I'm quite surprised with the great milestones I've been getting as well. But I think personally, I have a hyperactive mind, and my mind is a little bit like an aggressive Rottweiler that's just bred to just bite, you know, it always just needs to just have something and just bite and bite and bite onto it. And for me, that's just work. And I think that was my coping mechanism, actually. I just had this creative identity crisis. Okay, realistically, I might not be able to do and pursue an investigative story in Peruvian Amazons, or I don't know, in Cambodia or some of the other places I've been reporting from. But it's an evolution.
Yeah.
And that was my coping mechanism, to just claim some kind of dignity and control that that part is over, at least for the foreseeable future. And I just completely needed the dopamine of, oh, I wrote this, I created this, just I've done this, and I've applied to this, and I got this interview with this person and called with this person. So that was quite a compensation for that creative identity crisis. But I just wanted to say that a lot of people I know absolutely didn't achieve anything, at least that's how they phrase it, when I or a lot of other people threw themselves at, I don't know, baking or professional hustles and so on. A lot of people just threw themselves to Netflix and chill. And I think that is absolutely valid and absolutely understandable as well. My coping mechanism, or Netflix and crying as a coping mechanism, absolutely are just, they got nothing against each other. And I think depending on how you approach it, they could both be very healthy and very unhealthy.
I agree. So let's break down your milestones, your book. Where is it at? Last we spoke, you were fixing your manuscript. You were going to send it, send the first edits to your agent.
Yes, actually, I am probably going to be submitting the very final version today with my agent. And after that, later this month, we're going into submission, which is something I'm both thrilled and terrified about.
Congratulations on going into submission so early.
Thank you. It's been
a couple of months. It's been 2-3 months. And isn't it a little early by industry standards also, since you probably have a super polished product at hand?
I appreciate that. Well, I do hope it is as polished and as perfect as you think. But I'm a quite fast worker, I guess. Once I just get fixated on something, that my mind's Rottweiler will be just biting into it, and I will just be thinking of it and working on it. Whether I'm working on it or not, I'm just constantly thinking about it. And my agent was also super quick and very prompt to get back. I really appreciate that he took time over the holidays to just help me and line edit my book and give me more suggestions. So I think I'm right now in a mindset of, yeah, I feel like you can tweak it forever. It could take you another 10 years to edit and try to get the perfect book. But I feel like whatever I do at this point, it's not gonna be the reason whether if the book sells or not.
Yeah.
Any improvements, and I'm in a mindset of this is something that I do overall in my life and in my career, with experimenting with so many things and being the, what I jokingly call as a multi-hyphenated millennial cliche, is just rip the band-aid off. Just get on with it.
Speaking of multi-hyphenated millennial cliches, you had some gripes about millennial writers.
Not towards any person in particular, but obviously, as I've been writing a millennial Bildungsroman myself, I read a lot of these books that are branded in the same way. And at times I found myself thinking when Western writers, European writers, do something experimental, I don't know, write this really dry prose and not necessarily follow the traditions with writing or publishing. A lot of the times that's considered, oh wow, that's just really edgy and brave and how cool, how refreshing. I feel like if I did that, I couldn't really get away with it.
Absolutely.
If I did that, something quote-unquote groundbreaking with, say, I didn't use punctuation in my book or did these deliberate creative choices, I wouldn't be the brave and edgy, refreshing person, but I would be the dodgy, non-native English writer who shouldn't really be writing. So I feel that there is a very clear double standard. And I also sometimes find myself wondering. So in my part of the world, a lot of the books, I think this is something that you and I have been talking about in private, in non-Western parts of the world. A lot of the books take this Herculean responsibility of educating the Western readers about their problems and what their life is like. And this is a really heavy task, and it's something that Western writers, American writers aren't necessarily tasked with. And I wonder if I or you or people like us are allowed to write a really light-hearted book and funny book and fluffy book that doesn't have, I don't know, child brides or tribal conflicts or really sad women, covered women standing, posing in front of a mosque to symbolize her oppression and so on.
Yeah.
My agent and quite a few of my better readers felt that my book has a lot of humorous elements and it has some Bridget Jonesy aspects to it. I would call it a fluffy book with a serious heart or a serious book with a fluffy heart. Some bad things are happening to people, but they're still having fun, and they, even if they have marginalized identities, they have their own agency, they're creative and trying to just carve their place in the world, you know, rather than just sitting and crying about their fates.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there's the space for a writer like me to be humorous, if that makes sense. I guess soon I will find out.
So your documentary, you said you've been sending a documentary to film festivals. And did you finish the documentary in this pandemic time, in 2020?
Yes, so it's a 4-minute documentary, and I started to follow this group of Syrian refugee women who are coming together to lead and get a food collective, healthy food collective going. They are making salads and distributing them around the city, and they are participants of a program that not only hopes to give them some economic independence, but also some professional skills and independence, and help them to find their feet in a new city, in a new life. So I've been following that group of women, and I think I wrapped it up in like September. And since then, I had this attitude of, again, the Rottweiler was just at work, and I just sat down one day, and I know it's a very imperfect work. I just did it all myself. I just, with my own camera, with my own resources, I produced, directed and edited the film myself as a creative challenge. And then I ended up sitting down one day. I knew it was quite imperfect, but I just said, okay, you're feeling self-conscious, you don't want to do this, but you've done this work now, you've got a nice 4-minute documentary, and it's better if you submit it than it just stays in your files, you know. And I just sat down for a couple of days and entered it to any relevant festival that was going around that was covering themes like Turkey and my region, or immigration and asylum, or women empowerment, and so on. And I entered into quite a few festivals, and I started to get already some acceptances and great feedback. I think the film was already selected to participate to 7 festivals. It will be screened, and some of the screening already happened. And it even won 2 awards from 2 small festivals.
Wow.
So
congratulations.
Yeah, that was quite a nice little pandemic gift as well to me, because I decided that still I need to practice deliberate imperfection, you know, and just go for it. And I'm very glad I did that, because now with the good feedback that I've been getting from festivals, I feel very much encouraged to do something a bit more ambitious. I feel like now I'm allowed to take it to the next level and crush some of the self-doubt, like film, you know, on my own, can I not, should I not. And I already found a new topic for this year that I want to work on.
Are you otherwise a perfectionist, Didim? And somehow this pandemic has made you into a deliberate imperfectionist that you just mentioned.
Good question. The answer is yes and no. I have these moments of, if I'm relatively confident in some area, I think I might feel a little bit self-conscious and doubt myself, but I won't spend hours and days perfecting, trying to perfect and tweak small things. I will have that mechanism in the back of my head saying, like, yeah, you know what, this is decent. It's not the worst piece of text that people will have read in their lives, or the worst film that they will have seen. But at the same time, of course, I do have that battle at times, perfectionism, and it's not just with work, but how I approach a lot of things.
What's the vaccination situation in Turkey?
So I believe they bought about 50 million doses of the so-called Chinese vaccine in December, I believe, late December. But since then, there haven't been a lot of updates. And just yesterday, Mr. Erdogan announced that the vaccination will be starting Thursday or Friday later this week. And I can't wait, really. There is going to be a queue for the vaccine. Obviously, it's going to be, I haven't fully checked this yet because the announcement was just yesterday evening. But I assume that they're going to be vaccinating healthcare workers and vulnerable populations first. And there is going to be a queue. And I know that as a young and fit person, I'm going to be at the bottom of this queue. And that's absolutely fine. It might take us maybe till 2022 even to get vaccinated. But
yeah.
My arms, my legs, my bum, whatever is just open. Just give me that shot.
So yeah, I mean, at least even if we're not vaccinated, if 80% of the population is vaccinated, then we'll achieve some kind of herd immunity. That's what the epidemiologists are saying.
Yeah, and there is a lot of mistrust and a lot of conspiracy theories going around. I hear a lot of people saying, oh, so China invented the pandemic and now they're selling us vaccine, and I'm not going to get that vaccine. And you know, these kind of absurd reductions and generalizations
Yeah.
that don't involve an awful lot of critical thinking. So I'm a little bit afraid of that because you know how this misinformation spreads like wildfire and gets forwarded in WhatsApp. And unfortunately, a lot of people in the world still have limited levels of digital literacy, if I may say so, and will not question something they see on Facebook or WhatsApp. And I'm afraid it's the case here. But one thing with countries and regimes, let's say, like Turkey, is when you have a strong man that says something is gonna happen, it happens.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that kind of individualism that you might experience in the US or Germany. They are talking about having a centralized app,
mm-hmm.
which we already have. You have a code number and you get tracked and you can get into most of the public functions, like to a bus or even public transport, I think, only using that app. And they're talking about making the vaccine mandatory and it will be registered on that app. And unless you have a record on that app that you're vaccinated, good luck. You can't go to cinema, you can't take a bus. So, yeah, anti-vaxxers, tough luck in this country. It sounds like they will have very little choice. I mean, try doing that in the US, right? Or even in Germany, which also I know has a lot of big anti-vaxxers.
Yeah. They've been kept under surveillance, and one of these major anti-vaxxers who was behind organizing these protests, he got COVID and he was hospitalized and he was intubated.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it got really serious for him. The guy who did not think COVID was serious. Yeah.
I feel terrible for people he might have infected or the nurses and doctors that spent extra time of their lives to take care of people like that.
Yeah. How do you deal with that? It must be, incredibly difficult for medical personnel to be on the front lines.
To be just taking care of people who are just fresh out of a wedding when you couldn't see your children for months properly.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't feel like we'll go back to our pre-COVID life in 2019. What is your view on that? Would you want to go back to a pre-COVID life like we were living in 2019?
I think this is particularly hard because I had so many career milestones this past year, so I definitely wouldn't want to change that. But one optimistic part of me also feels that we're going to have a roaring 20s, like the 1920s.
That's one way of looking at it.
Once this calms down a little bit, we are going to have this rejuvenation in arts and literature and parties, and we will all hopefully have done a lot of reflection and sort some of our issues during these times, and hopefully it will get even better, hopefully.
Wow. That's a really hopeful message. Let's hope that happens. We just don't know when. Yeah, it might happen.
In the 1920s, it sounds like, I'm sure it was a small number of people who had all this great Gatsby-style partying. But it sounds like they had a bit of it when they came out of the war and the Spanish flu. I don't know if the pictures look all fancy and glamorous and they look like they're having fun. So I'm just predicting the same thing is gonna happen to us. We'll just be partying and merry and just taking a revenge for particularly the weekends and birthday weekends.
Yeah.
Because one lockdown model they followed here was a hybrid model. We still have that. We are in lockdown on holidays, on the weekends, full lockdown, hard lockdown, and on weekdays, we have a curfew at 9 p.m. and restaurants are shut, the public facilities are shut, and so on. And that's been rough to just work really hard, wake up and it's dark, and then spend all your day in a room and it's dark, and by the time you finish, it's dark, and then you can't go outside to take a walk in a park on the weekend to just get some fresh breath, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's been hard. So hopefully in once the roaring 20s roll over, I will be making up for these lost weekends.
Great. So this is another question that my friends want me to ask you. What have you learned about yourself and the people around you and the world?
Well, when it comes to people around me, unfortunately, I'm not talking about my immediate circles, but when it comes to people around me, unfortunately, I realized how many people lack empathy and social skills to just be able to follow some simple set of rules. So in that sense, it was quite disappointing. But at the same time, as it happens in times of hardship, I've seen incredible kindness and resilience, and that's been really heartening. For example, in the deepest days of the lockdown, in particularly in May, we had weeks and weeks of hard lockdowns in which you couldn't even go to the supermarket. I saw that in my community in Kadıköy, in Asian part of Istanbul, people mobilized and took turns and created programs to feed street animals, because normally they are out in the streets and they get fed by municipality workers, they get fed by restaurants and cafes. But when all these things shut, the street animals were going hungry. And that moved me to tears, because people really just took turns and patrolled around the neighborhood to make sure that they didn't go hungry.
And sense of solidarity extended to animals. That's really...
Absolutely. And this is just one really simple example. I've seen countless acts of kindness around me like this.
So do you have any plans for 2021? Now the book is gone. Are you going to focus on your next book? Do you have any more projects in the pipeline? How are you planning to spend your 2021?
I am working on a journalism app called Sanity Feed, which is a journalism app, journalism product to help to counter the what I call as the aggertainment culture in the news by a thoughtful and personalized curation of stories about what works in the world.
Okay, that sounds brilliant. Much needed in 2021, I suppose.
I hope so too. So I'm working on an MVP right now. Hopefully I will have something by the end of this month, and I'm gonna keep tweaking it and getting feedback and hoping to launch it maybe by the end of summer or so. But basically I put my own resources and I got some grants to develop this product, the minimum viable product, and after that I'm gonna have to just see where I am, because basically, to put it bluntly, I will need money to make it a really sophisticated and commercial product.
That's brilliant. Okay, so here's hoping probably in summer we'll all get to travel, we'll all get to fly, we'll all get to freely visit each other. Yes, hoping I get to see you at least this year in a few months or so.
Yes, I really Hope so too.
Okay. So again, I want to record my thanks to you for spending time, for telling us what's going on in your life in the past, since August, in the past two seasons. Now this is the final season. We will come back to you where you give us little shorter updates on what's happening in Turkey with regard to COVID. So if you have any final words.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. Just want to finish with one final point. I just wanted to emphasize that I know that I was extremely lucky this year. I had so many projects panning out, and I sometimes receive messages from friends that express, oh my gosh, you're doing so well. I achieved nothing this year, expressing this kind of self-consciousness and feeling bad for themselves. I just wanted to say that in my mind, there is no hierarchy to whether you're coping with this difficult time by throwing yourself at work or if the opposite happens. I feel like this is again something we have no control over.
That was episode 2 of the 3rd season of Record of Change. We hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. Next week, we'll hear from Karina, a German journalist living in Taiwan. You can listen to all our past episodes by following us on your favorite podcast app. Consider following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our website is recordofchange.com. If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to our feed, as it makes it easier for others to find the podcast. If you like supporting independent podcasts that bring unique stories from around the world, please consider supporting our work on Patreon. As a Patreon supporter, you will receive early access to episodes, bonus behind-the-scenes highlights, and opportunities to pitch questions for our future interviewees, alongside helping us to make the show. Even the smallest level of support could be a great boost as we strive to document the impact of COVID-19 on communities throughout the world. Thank you for your continued support. This podcast is implemented with and by members of the Bosch Alumni Network, a community that brings together former and current fellows, grantees, and staff members of the Robert Bosch Stiftung and its partners.